Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson, and we're set as usual with our Sunday morning show at Northwest Federal. And today is a big baseball day all over the country. Here in Chicago, you can see the Mighty Tigers. They'll be at White Sox Park for the final game of the series and their final appearance here of the year. And incidentally, they have one of the best young teams in baseball. They've got some great personnel, and it shows that if a club is intent on doing it, they can bring up young players through their own system, and that's what Detroit has done, and it's going to pay off. The Cubs, who have been getting wonderful pitching, will play the final game of the series at Montreal, and the Montreal club is a very, very good club, and they've got good pitching and good power and everything else. So the Cubs' hope of catching the Phillies as the season moves along, well, there is a chance that they can do it, but the likelihood of their doing it really doesn't seem possible. But we can hope for the best, because the Cubs do have a good ball club, and I would like very much to see them make it. We're going to talk baseball today with one of my old friends and a guy that's been on the beat with me for many, many years, and one of the outstanding baseball announcers in the country, Ernie Harwell, who is the voice of the Detroit Tigers. And you can pick up the Detroit games very easily here in the Midwest and hear Ernie most anytime. So we have a lot of things to talk about, and he'll be our guest in just about 1 minute. It's very nice to see my old friend Ernie Harwell again, and especially with the Detroit club doing so well. This is really, Ernie, you fellows have really done it the hard way. You've come up with some young ball players out of your system and so on, but it looks like they should be a pennant contender here in the next year or so.
I think they will be, Bob, and it is a pleasure to be with you. What happened with the Tigers is that Jim Campbell and Mr. Fetzer, the two bosses, made the decision that they didn't want to go into the open market in the free agent deal. They wanted to develop their own ball players, bring them up through the farm system, and they have shown that it can be done. Kansas City did pretty much the same thing in the Western Division. They won their last 2 years by doing that. And the Tigers now have an outstanding team of young men. They've got a great double play combination, Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell, two fellas that either one of them could be the rookie of the year. They've got a great hitter in Jason Thompson, the first baseman. This is only his third year, not even a full 3 years with the Tigers. They've got a good young left fielder named Steve Kemp. They've got a fine young catcher, still a little more in the development stage than the others, in Lance Parrish. And then the Tigers have sprinkled in some of the veterans, such as Aurelio Rodriguez and Rusty Staub, Jack Billingham, the pitcher, Jim Slayton, the pitcher, along with these fellas, and they've done a real good job.
Well, they have, and they have a mighty, mighty exciting team. I used to love to go into Detroit. It was always one of my favorite cities, and Boston was the other. I used to love that chili in the press room at Detroit. They still serve it?
They still serve it, and the gin players haven't forgotten you there either. They still owe you money.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun over in Detroit. I know our listeners would be interested because you were there, and this was the first year that members of our profession, baseball announcers, were honored at the Hall of Fame. And two good friends of ours, or yours and mine, Mel Allen and Red Barber, were the first ones selected. And I was very happy for them. And what was it like?
Well, it was very gratifying, Bob, to see those two fellows come in and have their talents recognized. And I think next year is going to be the year of Bob Elson, because certainly with your great credentials, you deserve a spot in the Baseball Hall of Fame. But they had a nice gathering there. They gather on the Village Green in this town that really takes you back to about 1850. It's sort of a time warp when you go in there. And they have a very fine, simple ceremonies. And this was the first year that they had recognized anybody who had made a contribution in radio. And Allen and Barber, I think, were two excellent choices. Although I felt like Bob Elson should be there ahead of those two, but I'm sure that next year will be the year of Bob Elson.
Well, thank you, and I certainly hope that happens. That would really be a great honor. That is a, you know, it's a marvelous place. It's, people say you should always see at least one Kentucky Derby there, be there. You should always go to one World Series. You should always go to Cooperstown at least once. I was there. We took a group from Northwest Federal there last year when Ernie Banks got in. And I was tremendously impressed with the whole event.
It's such a delightful atmosphere to start with. They're right there on a beautiful lake, and the hotels are beautiful. It's so quiet and serene that you just can't believe it's in our present civilization. And also, they've got some great displays that if people haven't seen, they certainly should see. They've got the Baseball Hall of Fame, where they have all the memorabilia of baseball and the souvenirs of these great players, like Ty Cobb and Babe Ruth. They even have a sound of their voices on tape that you can hear. They've got all the plaques there. They've got a library full of the baseball literature that people have access to. And especially on the day of the Hall of Fame, you can meet all these great ballplayers. Charlie Gehringer, Rube Marquand, all the greats come back. And it's really a heyday for the baseball fan. And I think they pack in about 10,000 to 15,000 people into that little town that is has a population of probably about 2,000.
Well, I can't think of any other community in the world that is strictly dedicated to baseball. Can you?
No, I sure can't. And it's such a wonderful, beautiful country up there, too. You know, the rolling hills of the New York State valleys, a wine country, I guess. And the foliage is so beautiful that even if you weren't interested in baseball, it's such a lovely place to go to.
Getting back to what we were talking about in the beginning, the Tigers coming up with their own youngsters out of their own system, any of these young ball players disturbed by the free agent salaries?
Well, I think they sort of like the fact that they're going to make a good bit of money, but I do feel that baseball's got to make some kind of a stabilization move in order to keep the ball player from moving from one team to another every year. I think that they owe it to the fans to build a team and let a man stay 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 years, because otherwise the baseball fan really has a tough time identifying with a team. If they're going to be completely fluid and move on all the time, you really can't set your loyalty on one team. And I think that sooner or later the executives of baseball and the player association, they'll have to get together, sit down, and work out a more equitable form of existence.
Well, I agree with you. And when they this contract runs out, I think there will be some baseball leaders. I don't mean Steinbrenner or Corbett, but I mean guys like Gussie Bush and Walter O'Malley, who are really going to take I said Walter O'Malley. Well, I would include him, too. The man up at Minnesota.
Griffith, yeah. I think the old school guys are going to take a stand. And there may be some fur flying because of that, because the players are probably going to take a fairly strong stand, too, and they've got to eventually compromise to get the game back on the field. But I do believe that the owners feel now that they gave up a little bit too much of the players, and they've got to get some of that back.
You know, there was a talk for a while, maybe a year or two ago, that possibly the instant replay that we see so much of in football would be used to some degree in baseball. Now, there was a situation at Sox Park, not in this homestand, but in the last homestand, where a batter on the White Sox was called out at the plate for interference. The runner was going, he was sent back to first base, and the batter was called out. Now, I had a good view of it because I was watching television. The interference was actually flagrant. I don't say that it was intentional, but it was flagrant. Let me give you one example. Batter took a swing at a ball. The runner was going. He brought his bat right back up right in front of the catcher's face. He couldn't throw it. If the umpire didn't call him out, he would have been negligent in his duty.
Well, that can happen, but I really don't believe in the instant replay as a mechanism within the ball game. I think that over the years, things like that are going to even up. Now, the Tigers had a situation in Yankee Stadium this year where a fan reached out and interfered with a ball, and it was very obvious on the TV replay, but the umpire didn't see it. Well, it was just tough for the Tigers. They had to take it. But I feel that in our civilization now, we have so much dehumanizing that we don't need any more. And I think the umpires are an integral part of the game, and the fact that you can go out and boo an umpire's decision is a basic part of baseball. And if we get it back to the mechanism of having a tape replay, even if it's only for part of it, I think that that's too much of an encroachment on the humanness of baseball, and I would be absolutely against it.
I would be too, and I don't think that you'd get two votes in the major leagues for it. My only point I was bringing it up was that manager Larry Doby, who you and I both knew was a player and always a man with always very fair, he came out and argued a long time about this. Had he been able to see he would have known that the umpire was 100% right. The batter should have been called out.
And I think the umpires are right most of the time. And the replay generally has the support of the umpires. I think the umpires are a very important part of baseball. They protect it right at its vital part, right there on the playing field where it's got to be protected.
And another thing you can say for the umpires, I feel the same way you do. The human equation should not be taken out. There's never been a scandal involving an umpire.
That's absolutely right. And they're always conscientious. They make mistakes, but we all make mistakes. And they're going to happen. And I think over the long haul, the mistakes the umpires make will even up. And you just have to accept them.
One of the great things that can be said about a close friend of mine who I knew very well, the late Joe McCarthy, who probably was one of the great managers in baseball, he was no umpire baiter, nor would he tolerate it on the part of the players. He just wouldn't stand for any of that because he felt that they were doing their job and they were trying hard to do a good job, and all that baiting was superfluous.
I think that's a good viewpoint, Bob, because Ty Cobb was the same way. They tell me that as fiery a competitor as he was, and he was the most competitive of all ballplayers, that he usually had the attitude of don't stir up the umpire because he might, in his humanness, try to get back at you sometime. And I've seen that happen. These umpires are human sometimes, and they react to criticism the same way most other people do. And I think a little honey can get you a lot more than a little vinegar can. And a lot of times these umpires get riled when they get too much criticism, and they'll stick it to a guy.
You know, you've been doing baseball not quite as long as I have, but you've been doing it with great credit to yourself and the game for many, many years. Why is it that you and I, who have seen thousands of big league ball players, have only seen one Pete Rose?
Well, I think it's the old syndrome, one in a million, you know. Those guys that don't come along that often, and that's what makes Pete Rose so great, that he is outstanding, and he's a unique type of person. At the age he is, and that batting streak was just fabulous. It attracted so much attention to baseball from people that really weren't completely interested in it. And I think it's a great thing for baseball when something like that comes along, where you get the marginal interest into it, and people become vitally interested in the game.
You know, they tell me in the New York theaters, they'd announce that Pete Rose got a hit right while the play was on.
That's great. Well, that's the way it should be. And of all the fellas to do it, I think Pete Rose is the one that was best qualified because he's a fantastic competitor. He's a switch hitter. He hits the ball hard. He's got great endurance, and for his age, he's got tremendous speed. And all those things enable a guy to put on a hitting streak.
Yes, he's a marvelous person. We were happy. We had him out here at Northwest Federal a couple of years ago, and I'm going to see him. He'll be at Wrigley Field next weekend. I'm going to plan to get him out here next year. I won't ask him about this year. The price might be too high.
That's right. Well, you know, he handled himself so beautifully in that streak. I was sorry at the end that they came out with that quote about the Atlanta pitcher, and I don't know the background of that, so I really can't comment on it. But I thought up until then that Pete handled himself so beautifully, in contrast to a fellow, say, like Roger Maris, who was chasing the Babe Ruth record, and Roger tried to hide himself from the writers and the media. We realize that these guys have pressure put on them, and a lot of times they are taken advantage of. But Pete Rose was so great that the way that he handled the guys, and he seemed to enjoy every minute of it.
Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is an old co-worker of mine and a guy who's done so well in our profession, Ernie Harwell, the voice of the Detroit Tigers. Try to get out and see that final game of the series today. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest, Ernie Harwell, one of the top guys in our business of broadcasting big league baseball, and we had some great times together. Unfortunately, he wasn't a gin player.
Fortunately for me, I wasn't. I saved my money, and I see where you end up in a bank. I knew it would happen with the way you played gin.
How about a good baseball story? I was telling you how much I loved the late Judge Landis and what a marvelous man he was. And the funniest story that ever happened that I was involved in with Judge Landis, I was doing a ball game at Wrigley Field, and the judge was sitting over to the left just a few feet from home plate. And he had that battered gray hat on, and he was eating popcorn. That's the first thing he'd ever do, as soon as he'd get the popcorn man. So he called, signaled for me to come over. So I was wondering what he wanted, so I went over, and he said, Bob, I'd like to tell you something in strict confidence. I said, that made me wonder what it's going to be. So he said, lean in real close here. He said, I don't want anybody else to hear this. So now I'm really concerned about what he's going to say. So I got down real close, and he said, Bob, he said, you know that there's a law that they can't bring butter within 50 miles of Wrigley Field?
You never know, do you?
The popcorn was dry.
Well, I tell you a story that I always enjoyed, a very short one. We had a fellow down in the Southern League when I worked down there in Atlanta named Joe Engel. He was the owner of the Chattanooga Ball Club, and they call him the Barnum of the minor leagues. He was always playing practical jokes on people, and as a matter of fact, one time he traded his shortstop, Johnny Jones, for Thanksgiving turkey. But the story I wanted to tell you was that he had a young ball player holding out, a young rookie, and the guy sent Joe a telegram, and he said, you either pay me $3,000 this year or count me out. And Joe sent him a telegram back and said, 10, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Oh, that's cute. He was quite a character. There was a man whose life was wrapped up in baseball.
Oh, it sure was. He worked for the Griffith family, you know. He scouted Walter Johnson. He's the guy that had signed Walter Johnson, but later on became a club owner, and he was sort of a ne'er-do-well pitcher himself, but he was a great guy.
I've got to tell you a Walter Johnson story. Everybody knows about Walter Johnson. He had the greatest fastball in the world. I don't think he ever hit a batter. He was very, very careful because of the great speed. And some rookie came up, was going to lead off in a ball game, and Johnson, while he was warming up, threw one up into the screen. So the kid saw that, and he thought, my God, this guy's wild today. I better watch out. So he stepped into the batter's box, and he had a count on him, a ball two and strike two, and he threw him another fastball that just missed the corner. And the kid thought it was a strike, and he started to walk away, and the umpire turned to him and said, hey, come back here. He said, that was a ball. A count is just 3-2. You got another one coming. The kid turned and said, you take it. I've seen enough.
I don't blame him. That's the way Walter Johnson was, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He must have been a fabulous pitcher.
Yeah. I wish I'd have seen him. Well, you have, in your experience and in Detroit, you mentioned it before, Ty Cobb probably is still recognized as the greatest all-around ball player that ever lived.
I think so. Lifetime batting average, 367. You know, any ball player today would settle for that for 1 year and more than likely win the batting title with it. And he is, I think, the greatest ball player that ever lived. He played for 23 years and had that great batting average. Not only was he a great hitter, but he could break up a ball game with his base running. He was always upsetting the opposition. And he was probably the thinking man's ball player of all time. Tyrus Raymond Cobb, the Georgia Peach.
He was really and truly something. I understand he wound up with a lot of money and a Coca-Cola stock.
He did. He got a lot of good advice when he was playing with the Tigers early. He not only got Coca-Cola stock, but he got General Motors stock, which wasn't too shabby either. But, Bob, you know, they tell me that he was the number one competitor, and when he played in Augusta, he roomed with a guy named Nap Rucker, who later pitched for Brooklyn. And in those days, they not only had the same room, they slept in the same bed, and they shared the same bath. And one time Rucker got knocked out of the ball game and walked back to his rooming house and got in the tub. And Cobb came in after the game was over, mad as a hornet, broke down the bathroom door, grabbed him out of the tub and said, look, I've got to be number one on anything. That includes getting in the tub first. That's the kind of competitor he was.
He was really marvelous. What about the race? Boston going to be able to hold out?
I think so. I think Boston's got the best overall strength. They've probably got more experience in their pitching staff than the other teams, and they've got a team that if somebody gets hurt, they can put somebody else in. I notice Rice and those other fellows beginning to hit again. Maybe they've had their slump. Of course, from the Tigers' standpoint, we would like to see them hit another very bad slump and come back and meet the Tigers. The Yankees have made a run for it now, and it'll be interesting to see whether they can keep it up. Baltimore seems to have faded somewhat, but I'm a great admirer of Earl Weaver. I think he's one of the finest managers in baseball today, and I think if anybody can get anything out of that club, Earl Weaver will do it.
The Kansas City-California race looks like it's going right down to the wire in the other division.
That's right. I think Kansas City's probably got the edge because of their experience. They've won it twice. They've then been there before. California, it'd be interesting to see them come up and get a little bit closer. And Oakland's been a very pleasant surprise for everybody. Those team of young players that look like they want to play. Texas gave it a run for a while, but I think they've sort of faded in the stretch. They may be a little bit too far back to make it.
Everybody's pulling for the Cubs in Chicago, hoping they'll do it, but I just don't think that they have enough. Lamp has been very unfortunate. Whenever he pitches a great game. They can't get any runs for him. On the south side, Bill Veeck has had his problems. He doesn't have that bankroll that Steinbrenner and Corbett and those guys have. I just wonder what Veeck's plans are for next year. He is not the kind of a baseball man who's going along with the same cast of characters. And I wonder what is going to happen, because this is when it comes to what the club has been able to accomplish this year, it's been an unfortunate year for him.
It's been a tough year for Bill, and I agree with you. He'll make some changes. I think, he used to say, there'd be three teams, one there, one going, and one coming. And I'm sure that will happen with the Sox this coming year, because their pitching has been suspect over this season. That's been their toughest department, I think. And the guys who had good years last year, a lot of them just haven't come through this season. And, of course, he gave away some power, too, when those fellows like Zisk and Gamble were traded away. So he's paying for it now.
Well, he certainly is, and it's going to be interesting to see what develops between now and next season. Anyway, baseball, I think, is going to have a record attendance year.
Looks like it. There's a great deal of interest in it, and people just keep flocking to the ballparks, and it's great to see. We really haven't had a close race yet either. If they get right down to the wire, it'll be fantastic the way they put people in the ballpark. But I think we've got a lot of good young ball players that have come along now, and it's a very interesting game to watch.
Ernie, two of the notable occasions for the increased attendance are Milwaukee and San Francisco.
That's right. San Francisco coming back, and it's great to see them come back because they were really in the doldrums. It looked for a while as the team might have to be moved out of San Francisco. Milwaukee's turned it around with their home ownership. I think it's a great thing because they pretty much raped that city for a while, at one time before they went to Atlanta, and they did the fans wrong up there, and now they've got new ownership, and they say they're going to stay, and they've got an interesting club. George Bamberg has done a fantastic job in his first year managing, and he's getting some good pitching from his youngsters, and I just hope they stay up there in the race.
Getting back to Cooperstown, tell us about Charlie Gehringer. How did he look? He's one of the greatest ball players of all time.
Charlie Gehringer was a great looking up there. He's 80 years old now, and I think he moves around better than any of the other fellows that came to the Hall of Fame, and they had a bunch of them. They had about 20 or 25 former players. He plays golf two or three times a week in Detroit. He comes to the ball game. We see him at the ballpark a lot. I saw him and Mrs. Gehringer both at Cooperstown, and they are terrific people. And I'd say it just couldn't happen to a nicer guy than Charlie Gehringer.
You're absolutely right. Our guest today is Ernie Harwell, the voice of the Detroit Tigers. Try to get out and see them today at Sox Park. This will be the final game of the series and also their final appearance here this year. And they've got a great young ball club. We'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today is Ernie Harwell, the voice of the Detroit Tigers, an old friend. You know, Ernie, certain clubs are having problems in baseball, and still it's surprising to hear the commissioner talk about putting a major league club in Tokyo and different places around the world and things like that. I think that they've got to find, and I think you brought up the very good point at the start. The next time they sit down with the ball players and the owners, they've got to get together on something that is more equitable for both. You and I were familiar with what brought this problem, the reserve clause, that was unfair, but nothing like the situation is today.
No, it's a little bit botched up right now. I think they've got to get down and settle it, and I think the players probably deep in their hearts realize that, although they've accrued some extra money from the situation as it arose. But they are baseball-minded enough, I think, the clear thinkers among the players, where they realize, too, that the owners and the players are in this thing together, and we've all got to stick together, and they've got to reach some kind of a compromise to stabilize the situation. Because right now it's not stable enough. That plus the fact that you've got really too many teams in the American League, for instance, and the scheduling is very difficult because of that fact. It's tough enough in the National League, but in the American League, we have some real oddball situations in the schedule. For instance, the Minnesota Twins played host to Toronto the 27th of July, and that was the first time in the 1978 season that Toronto had been in the city of Bloomington, Minnesota.
What if they took Tokyo into the big leagues? This would be Monday over there, wouldn't it, or Friday?
And we've got so many long hops that the ball players and the owners are really playing for the airlines up to to an extent. You know, if they go to Tokyo, I don't know what it would be.
Ernie, thanks so much for being our guest. Always a pleasure seeing you. I enjoyed all the time that we were able to spend together. And as I said before, you've been a great credit to our profession. Good fortune to you and the Detroit Tigers.
Thank you, Bob. And I know next summer we'll see you in Cooperstown.
I hope so. Our guest, Ernie Harwell, the voice of the Tigers and one of the great announcers in the country. Try to get out and see that final game of the series today. Whatever you do, have a happy day. And now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Sunday at our usual time.